Since nothing is separate from the Supreme Lord, a pure devotee of the Lord cannot think of anything but the Lord. Nor can a pure devotee contemplate ruling or enjoying universal opulence. Even if given all the opulence of the universe, he would immediately offer at the lotus feet of the Lord and return to his position as a humble servant of the Lord. The words, Ajitatma Sadadivir Vimriya, are very significant in this verse. The lotus feet of Lord Krishna is so opulent that even the lords of all material opulence, namely Brahman and Shiva, as well as the other demigods, are always searching for a glimpse of the Lord's lotus feet. The word Vimriya indicates that the demigods are not actually able to see the lotus feet of the Lord, but are endeavouring to see them. An example of this is given in the 10th canto, where Lord Brahma offers prayers to Vishnu, begging the Lord to rectify the disturbances of the earth. A similar verse is found elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the 11th canto. It says, "The devotee who has offered his soul to me does not want anything if it is separate from me. Not the position of the supreme demigod of the universe, Brahma, nor that of Lord Indra, nor kingship over the entire universe, earth, or over the lower planetary systems, nor the mystic perfections of yoga, nor even freedom from the cycle of rebirth. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Kapoor, the word Ikintapana can also be taken to mean a dependent or those whose senses are uncontrolled. Although the demigods are all to be respected as devotees of Lord Vishnu, the absence of gross material discomfort in the higher planetary systems makes them tend to become affected by the bodily concept of life. And sometimes they experience some spiritual difficulty due to the gorgeous material facilities available to them. Such disturbances, however, cannot exist within the mind of a pure devotee of the Lord, as indicated in this verse by the word Akunta Smriti. According to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakura, we can understand from this verse that since none of the material facilities available in any of the universal planetary systems can distract the pure devotee of the Lord, such a devotee can never possibly fall or become inimical to the Lord's service. So here, this verse describing again the qualities of the topmost devotee of the Lord, how they are so attached to the lotus feet of the Lord that they will not give up service to the lotus feet of the Lord even for half a moment. So from that, you know, we can also understand that we can imagine the ecstasy or the pleasurable existence, you know, of the devotees of the Lord. They are so happy, so blissful, that nothing can entice them, nothing within the material universe can entice them to give up service to the lotus feet of the Lord even for half a moment. So as well as glorifying the Lord, it also gives us a glimpse into the glories of the life of a devotee, a life in the spiritual world. So it's also giving us a glimpse into the happiness of spiritual life. Here it describes in the synonyms that one love or a moment that is 8/45 of 1 second. So divide a second into 45. 8 of those portions is one another, and the pure devotees of the Lord do not give up the lotus feet of the Lord even for half of that, which would make it 4/45 of a second. So that is the spiritual life, actual pleasure, freedom from anxiety. In contrast to that, of course, we have material existence. So we describe Vaikuntha life. Vaikuntha means no anxiety. And here we have Kunta, or material existence. There's so many problems, so many anxiety. And the more society or the individuals within society forget their spiritual existence, then the more they experience anxiety, a lack of pleasure, a lack of happiness. So understanding the purpose of life is to serve the Lord. When one understands that purpose of life, one knows how to be happy in this life and happy in the next life. And we see that because no one is, apart from the devotees of the Lord, no one is actually teaching people the purpose of life, therefore they cannot be happy. And so many arrangements are made, so Prabhupada has pointed this out. So many high officials, government persons, social workers, UN workers, philosophers, scientists, doctors, geologists, physicists, so many people from all walks of life, each coming, presenting that very proudly usually, that we are doing this to solve the problems of the world or this part of the world. And Srila Prabhupada would gradually try to help them understand that without understanding the purpose of life, all of it was actually a useless waste of time. It's a very difficult thing to tell someone, you know, who has dedicated their whole life and who feels themselves to be extremely important in you know, some great position and some great organization of the world where you know, billions of dollars are being put into so much, so many different programs which are very elaborate and very vast, and to someone to tell you that it's all a complete waste of time, useless. Very difficult, but that's what Srila Prabhupada told them, and that is the fact. Unless they couple their endeavours with knowledge of what is the purpose of life. Otherwise, Srila Prabhupada said, it is like decorating a dead body. That's it. All these organisations and throughout the whole world, big, big men, big, big plans, big, big endeavours, billions of dollars. It is like decorating a dead body. How can we substantiate that? For how many decades, how many centuries has this sort of practice been going on? And where do we see in the world that people are happy? So people may say, oh, you know. So that is the proof. How many problems, if you look at the world, it is just problems everywhere. Big, big problems. Big, big problems that cannot be solved. Isn't that a fact? No. Is there anyone? No sane man would disagree that the world is embarrassed by so many problems. And that is the proof that it's all been useless. As Srila Prabhupada points out, United Nations means coming together, bringing all the nations together. And what does Srila Prabhupada say? All this is they're putting up new flags. New flags means nations are breaking up, fighting, can no longer get on. So they split up and create a new flag. So many new flags. So useless waste of time. So it is the world is actually completely dependent upon the pure devotees of the Lord who know the purpose of life and know how to reconnect us with the Supreme Lord in all our endeavours. Then all those same activities will actually be successful. Not that people should give up being social workers or doctors or lawyers or United Nations workers. Srila Prabhupada isn't saying that. He isn't saying give up your job and come and live in the Brahmacharya ashram. He's saying stay in your job, do your work, but do it knowing what the goal of life is, to serve Krishna. That's a very important point. Prabhupada is not saying give up Christianity or give up Buddhism or give up Muslim religion. He's not saying to anyone to give up the religion, the occupation or anything. Just do whatever you're doing, but couple it with a real knowledge of the goal of life. How to reconnect our relationship with the Supreme Lord. Then one can be actually happy. So Srila Prabhupada, of course, his followers and the whole Hare Krishna movement who follow in his footsteps, they have that vision to one degree or another. We see Srila Prabhupada as an example that he was always seeing everything. Because one cannot connect everyone, others in this world, to Krishna, help them to see everything in relationship with the Supreme Lord, if that vision is not there in oneself. And of all devotees, of course, the Uttama Adhikari, they have that vision, perfectly, without flaw. As is described here, that even for half a moment, they cannot, it's not possible for them to actually give up that vision of seeing things in relationship to the Lord. One time when Srila Prabhupada was in Perth, he was the plane which was actually bringing him to Melbourne to install the deity here, Gordon Farm, to inaugurate the temple opening here as well. So the plane was delayed for some hours, and Amoga, his disciple, was sitting there with him, and sort of apologetically he was saying, Srila Prabhupada, one day we will have our own airport. And Srila Prabhupada said, it is our airport. Everything belongs to Krishna, so actually it is ours. So that, you know, you see the Madhyama Adhikari there, they see the Lord, they're trying to engage people and reconnect everything in the service of Krishna, but the Pure Devotee, and everything is already connected with Krishna. It's already Krishna's airport. So it just gives you a glimpse into their the mind of a pure devotee, always seeing everything good in relationship to Krishna. So the purpose of this movement, of course, is to help people to become Krishna conscious, so to give them that goal in life, and in that way to free them from the problems of material existence, and to help them to become experience transcendental pleasure. When Srila Prabhupada, actually when he came to Melbourne and he installed the deities at Gordon Tide to perform that ceremony, and then I think it was the next day he was giving a lecture and he was discussing, he was saying that you are very fortunate because the Supreme Lord has come to your country. So he was referring, of course, to Sri Sri Gaurangi Thara. He said, they have come to your country to teach you how to be free from anxiety. And simply by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, as they have advised, one can actually taste the goal of the meaning of life, the goal of life, and one can taste real pleasure. So that's what Srila Prabhupada explained. But, very, very fortunate that Sri Sri Gaurangi Thara has come to our country. It describes here that even great demigods like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, all the topmost demigods, not to speak of other demigods, so many great saints and sages and yogis, they are searching out after the lotus feet of the Lord, because understanding that that is the real platform of opulence and happiness. Despite their level of opulence in the upper planetary system, we can only imagine how materially opulent it is there, and yet they know that that is insignificant in comparison to that transcendental bliss of the lotus feet of the Lord. But it is very difficult for them. Although they're searching out, that shelter, it is very, very rare and very, very difficult. Yet, we see that, as Srila Prabhupada has pointed out, they're searching, somehow let me find God, somehow let me see the Supreme Lord, somehow let me approach Him, and they cannot, very rarely. But Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, they come to see us. That's what Srila Prabhupada said. They come, and they come to live in our temple. That is our great fortune. Sri Shivara Balana and Jagannath Balana. Jagannath has come from Jagannath Puri. Generally, he is seen once a year for those who are very, very fortunate. And even others, they go to Jagannath Puri, they cannot go in the temple. And Jagannath, he has come here to live with us. Why have we been so fortunate? Because the Lord follows his pure devotees. Because Srila Prabhupada came to Melbourne, therefore, Ramanathai followed, and Jagannath followed him, and Sri Sri Radhakrishna followed him, and Srila Prabhupada asked him, you stay here, and so they stay. So that is our great fortune by the blessings of the pure devotees of the Lord. And apart from the worship, the opportunity to literally associate, to live with the Lord on a daily basis, we can also chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is even more accessible. So the Lord has become even more accessible, even in the deity form of the Lord, that we can chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra at any time. This morning, I got up quite early because my daughter was a little disturbed and I didn't want to wake her. I was thinking, where will I chant? I sometimes chant in the lounge room, but had I chanted in the lounge room, she would have run around the house. And then she would have disturbed her mum, who was already had a late night. So I actually chanted in the toilet. It was the only place I could find was quiet. I chanted a couple of times in the toilet. I'd shower later. But actually, you can actually chant Hare Krishna anywhere. I've actually seen Srila Prabhupada state that. And of course, Kauravi Srila does other things. He used to lock himself in a latrine, a thing, and that, of course. And chant the Hare Krishna Mantra. He used to sometimes go to the where people used to pass through, and he would chant Hare Krishna because no one would go there to bother him. if he would chant somewhere else, they would, sadhu, give me your blessing. Of course, they didn't really want his blessing. They just wanted some money, some material offering. He wasn't very happy with that sort of insincere people approaching. But sometimes he would chant like that. But, I'm not recommending that that's what we tend to do. But the point is that the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is just so accessible that you can chant it any time, any place, anyone can chant it, whether they're pure or impure. For instance, generally to worship the deity or to approach the deity, you have to purify yourself, and especially to approach them very closely, you have to take initiation, be trained up, come to the Brahminical standard, chant the Gayatri Mantra, and what have you. So, although the deities are generally available, the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra is the form of the Lord even more accessible to anyone, anytime, any place. So therefore, Srila Prabhupada says in that same lecture, he said, my request, therefore, is that you just chant, vibrate the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Just chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and eat as much prasadam as possible. That was his request when he installed the deity. Chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, eat as much prasadam as possible. Now, how easy is that? How accessible has Krishna made himself to everyone? Is there anyone that really, even if someone says, oh, I have so much difficulty, I can't chant, Srila Prabhupada points out, you ask someone to chant Hare Krishna, and they'll give so many arguments why they can't chant. Srila Prabhupada says, in the same time, you've used 50 words to say why you can't chant, but you couldn't say 2 words to say Hare Krishna. But even such persons, will take some prasadam. And then they will, while they're sitting taking prasadam, they will hear the other devotees chanting. But Krishna has, you know, made himself so accessible. So even though he is unapproachable, very difficult to achieve, very difficult to see, because of the mercy of pure devotee, he has made himself very accessible. Of course, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu reminds us of our own nature, and he says that actually I am so unfortunate. Although the Lord has invested all these transcendental potencies in the holy name of the Lord, I have no attraction. But that is certainly our great misfortune. So, of course, for the mass of people, therefore, no one is excluded. Everyone has an opportunity to come, chant Hare Krishna, take prasad. If one wants to make their life completely successful in this life, and they want to seriously take up the chanting purely, then of course they can study under the guidance of the pure devotee of the Lord, and can learn to chant without offence, and to also worship the deities, and to become very fixed up, completely free from all material contamination of their chanting, and in that way go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. So that requires chanting purely, or gradually becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. As you went short, Prabhupada was in Perth. Again, one Indian boy came into his room, and he asked Srila Prabhupada, he said, "How can I become a pure devotee?" And Srila Prabhupada said, "Come and live with us." That's the process. Come and live with us, you become a pure devotee. And of course, so therefore you see that also one time Srila Prabhupada said, we are spending huge amounts of money purchasing these properties for these temples. And he said, but the only purpose is to give people an opportunity to hear and chant about the Lord. That is why we're spending millions of dollars all over the world for big opulent temples. But he said the only purpose that we're doing that is to give people an opportunity to hear and chant the Lord's Hare Krishna. So that purpose is there, and of course, as one wants to become more serious in the chanting and attain perfection, take advantage of the fact that the Lord has given their association, take advantage of that association, become purified and go back to Godhead, then one can take, live with the devotees. Live with the devotees, of course, doesn't mean that just a person living in the temple. Live with the devotees means regularly associating. One can live in their home, but they're regularly associated. They're all living with the devotees. Even if they live, 100 miles away, if they're, that association, that relationship is, very strong, and is, always taking advantage of hearing and chanting and imbibing the mood properly of the devotees, there's no real separation. That's living with the devotees. So there's two, a lot of people come to the temple and they chant Hare Krishna and they dance and they take the shard, and they're becoming purified of millions of lifetimes of contamination and sinful activity, and rapidly making progress towards associating, even on the lowest platform. Srila Prabhupada says even the Kanishka Adhikaris, what have you, come to the temple with a completely materialistic purpose, imperceptibly they're actually gradually being liberated. And it's so powerful. What to speak of others who are taking advantage properly. So here, of course, it's pointing out that if devotees do want to become serious, and take full advantage, then gradually that means they're cultivating pure devotional service. Such pure devotees are not like the demigods who become, you know, the demigods are also devotees, but they actually become somewhat bewildered by material facilities. So, you know, many people who come to the Hare Krishna temple, you know, they're still somewhat bewildered by they come here to enjoy in a material way, although imperceptibly they're being liberated, but the problem is that they will come and they sort of may go, and they may, you know, go back, you know, into Maya, into the material illusion, into material activities, and of course that means that although they're making some progress, they will have to take another birth until they become, you know, more situated on a more serious platform as you can in the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So therefore, devotees who actually don't want to be in that boat, they should be careful not to follow that line. So there's sort of two types of devotees that are taking advantage of the opportunity of the temple. There's those who come like that to sort of enjoy and, you know, keep a lot of their material desires intact. But the other devotees, they are very careful to remember the main purpose of a temple, and that is we're here to hear and chant in a pure way so as to finish up the business of Krishna consciousness in this lifetime and go back to Godhead. So, therefore, of course, gradually devotees, they will take initiation, they will take Brahma initiation. So it's not necessary that everyone becomes a Brahma, but gradually they take shelter of the spiritual master and follow Krishna consciousness more seriously. And Srila Prabhupada, especially for those who are actually initiated, and especially for those who initiated into Brahma, Prabhupada said that first initiation, when the devotees show that they're sincere, he says there's a certain amount of leniency that one will take initiation, and it's understood that, you know, they're not quite on the platform, but there's some leniency there that they will very quickly come to that platform, strictly following, you know, the regular principles, 10 and 16 rounds. You know, there may be a couple of mishaps here and there, but by and large, there's a little bit of leniency, but it's understood that they'll very quickly, you know, be fixed up, steady in that situation. But Brahman initiation is not to be given unless a person is shown that they are fixed up. Therefore, it's much more strict. There's no, you know, the leniency factor is not there at that point. It's expected. The Brahman initiation, second initiation is being given, one has to be extremely careful. And Srila Prabhupada, he said that there's no question of giving Brahman initiation to a devotee who cannot get up the Mangalarti. If devotees, you know, do not rise for Mangalarti, there's no question of them receiving second initiation. And, you know, he was saying different letters to the devotees, but it's expected, if one has Brahman initiation, it's expected they will rise early in the morning from Mangalarti, they'll attend the, hear Srimad Bhagavatam, chant 16 rounds, follow the four regular principles, like that. That's expected. One time, and we see that, you know, Srila Prabhupada set that example. So Srila Prabhupada came here, of course, and they showed him upstairs, and then they showed him his rooms. And of course they had made, you know, some rooms for Srila Prabhupada, and they spent a lot of time doing everything up really nicely. And Srila Prabhupada, when he looked at him, and he sort of said in a very innocent, almost childish way, all this is for me, like this. But there was no sense of, for me, for my enjoyment. For me, in the sense that, the disciples had offered that to their spiritual master, who of course would offer it to Krishna. To give an example of Srila Prabhupada's mood, one time when he was in Mayapur, the devotees approached him and they wanted to show Srila Prabhupada the plans for his own, I think it was Samadhi or something like that, or quarters, not Samadhi, but might have been his quarters or something, or something that was dedicated to his rooms, something that was dedicated to him. And when they showed him the plans, he wasn't very interested. It might have been that particular building or something. But when they showed him the plans, he wasn't interested. He sort of showed no sign of interest. He didn't really say anything. They sort of scratched their heads a little bit. Then they came back another time and they presented it like this. They said, Srila Prabhupada, we want to show the world for all time to come how the spiritual master is a representative of Krishna and should be worshipped, in the same way we worship God. And then Srila Prabhupada, so then he showed great interest in those things. So we should not misunderstand Srila Prabhupada's interest in those rooms up there as something for his personal pleasure. In fact, we see that when Srila Prabhupada stayed here, as he did wherever he was all over the world, the devotees who would stand guard on his door and, after preaching all day and seeing so many people, seeing to his disciples and organising things all over the world and so much correspondence, then he would rise at 1:30. At 1:30 in the morning he would rise and he was doing at that stage the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he would translate the books, and then he would be up all day again preaching. Now that was his regular program. So it's not as if he was, all these rooms are for me, I'll stretch out, have a good sleep, feed up, Srila Prabhupada utilized the facility for Krishna's service and extended that service to show how the spiritual master should be worshipped and used. One time, actually, when Srila Prabhupada was in Perth with his disciples, we see the opposite end of the scale. But his servant, Sri Kirti, and Amoga, and Paramahansa, I think, and then another couple of devotees there, there was Ganesh and someone else. And so a couple of devotees went out, one was doing Sankirtan, one was trying to get important people to come and speak to Srila Prabhupada. And the three that stayed back, so Srila Kirti then cooked lunch for Srila Prabhupada. And their habit was that after lunch, they would, eat large quantities of what was left after they served Srila Prabhupada and mix it with large quantities of yogurt. Then after that, of course, they would, fall asleep. Srila Kirti mentions that generally he might have slept very lightly sometimes during the day. But on this particular occasion, they eaten so much and they slept for a couple of hours. Srila Prabhupada happened to walk past their rooms and he saw them sleeping like that, deeply, deeply in those rooms. And he went in and woke up Srila Kirti and came into my room. And he said to me, he was very angry. He said, even the Kamis are better than you. Even the Kamis are better than the Bodhis. Because they don't sleep during the day. They're out. They're working very hard for sex life and for money. But they're not sleeping during the day. But here, the devotees, they're thinking, Krishna will send money, let us eat and sleep. So then he asked Sri Kirti, go and get the others. starting my life coming, rubbing your eyes, and Srila Prabhupada, you know, went on and reiterated the same point. He was very serious that he didn't want that the devotees, you know, those who are actually supposed to be initiated and taken chanting, you know, a little bit more seriously, to, you know, take that mood that these temples are something of a transcendental hotel. Right? As Srila Prabhupada once said, you know, a transcendental, he said, then everything becomes a transcendental void. And he actually said that his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati before, he became disturbed by the fact that many of his followers and disciples were in that mood of taking, utilizing the temple as a residence, you know, to sleep and to eat well and like that. That he felt that they hadn't picked up his message of the real, you know, importance of the temple was an opportunity to preach. And he actually said, Srila Prabhupada said that, he said, if one person could pick up that mood, that the real purpose of, you know, all my instructions, all these temples, all these endeavours is to preach Krishna consciousness. If one person understands that, my mission is successful. And of course we understood that one person properly did understand that, and that was Srila Prabhupada, and he did preach. So therefore, he was very strict on this point. So, but Srila Prabhupada said that actually Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was disturbed by the increasing number of followers who had that mood that he actually left the planet early. Now we know that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was, you know, quite young. I'm not sure the exact age, it was, you know, like 48 or something, or 60 or something. So it was, he left quite early, he left the plane quite early. I'm sure Prabhupada, a couple of times he stayed, but that was the reason. So it is very disturbing to the acharyas when devotees, of course, who are, you know, supposed to be sincere followers, imitate in one sense, or, you know, keep some of the bad habits that, you know, new people or the general mass of people keep when they come to the temple. We should be very careful. And you see here, described here, that and you see the demigods, you know, they're sort of, the result is, of course, that with the demigods, because they're bewildered by facility on the heavenly planet, even though they're devotees, you know, they can't take full shelter. It disturbs their bhajan, it disturbs their meditation, it disturbs their service, because they're distracted from their relationship with the Lord. But a pure devotee, or those trying to become a pure devotee, they're never distracted like that. So that's of course how we recognize that one is advancing nicely in Krishna consciousness, that they understand the purpose of the temples, and they recognize the extreme benediction opportunity that is there, that the Lord is present in the form of his deities, in the form of his holy name, in the form of his representatives, in the form of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, in the form of these temples. The Lord is present, he's made himself so acceptable. An intelligent person, knowing how rare that is, even for the demigods, would take full advantage. How is this that such a rascal like me has got an opportunity to daily associate with the Lord just by chanting his holy name? Something that is so rare throughout the universe. A sincere and intelligent person will take advantage of that. And if they do that and utilize the temple to preach Krishna consciousness, and in that way serve the Lord, serve the acharyas, they'll go back to Godhead in this lifetime. They'll go back to God. That's the benediction. And going back to Godhead means that they'll get that transcendental pleasure, which is so wonderful that the pure devotees are tasting that, you know, they can't give it up for half a second, you know, no matter what is offered to them. That is that pleasure that is available. It can be there in this life, especially in that way. So there's a little information about this verse here. If there's any questions or comments,
In relation to that pastime as well, the devotees in he said that Prabhupada became angry and Prabhupada became very angry at my friend. And I remember it came out, I can't remember which one to say, but Prabhupada's anger was like white pigs who were the recipient of it. Now, to a lot of people who have an interest in spiritual matters and study other gurus and so forth, the archetype of guru is somebody who doesn't lose his cool. He's not angry, who is, you know, always smiling and so on. What's your realization about this? That Prabhupada
pure devotee, one who actually represents Krishna, they use everything in the service of Krishna, even anger. And they get very angry. And they don't use anything for their own sense gratification, including anger. Whereas bogus gurus, in order to get adoration and distinction, will make a show of not displaying anger, even though possibly it should be displayed. So they'll neglect the service of the Lord by utilizing anger when they need to be, because they're more interested in their own personal adoration. There's an example here when Srila Prabhupada was upstairs. When Srila Prabhupada sometimes got really angry is when he didn't say anything. If he got chastised, he got applied him. when he was upstairs here, he sat in one room up there. I think he might have been taken to Sharon or doing something. As they were sitting there, there was this massive big bang noise, you know, like, sounded like an explosion. And the devotees turned around and saw someone had put like a very large door. There was a doorway, and they just lent a big door, wooden door there. It hadn't been fastened, just to sort of block the entrance. And it had actually fallen, and this fell apart by just a fraction. It would have just, you know, crushed his skull. And Srila Prabhupada became, you know, very angry, you know, at that sort of, you know, dangerous and neglectful sort of type of so-called service. He became so angry that, you know, he just sat there very silently and gravely. And the devotees were there, they felt that that was, you know, much more angry and powerful than sometimes when they seem to chastise. But, you know, that anger helped those devotees to understand, just don't do something so stupid that could endanger the life of your own spiritual master. Now, Srila Prabhupada allowed such a whimsical type of activity. If he's not doing his disciples a favour by properly training them, then those disciples, then in turn, teach, you know, hundreds of other people that same type of lackadaisical service. Hundreds and hundreds of people are misled if Prabhupada doesn't display his anger to chastise, to correct. If the spiritual master, if he feels that just by speaking some words very mildly, he may not display anger. But if he feels that the disciples need a little, you know, extra knock on the head to get the message through, then he'll display some anger. And by displaying that anger, he's helping them to go back to God. Any other questions?
You were mentioning the example of Gaur Kishore Das Babaji, how to avoid people. He used to go in places where nobody disturbed him. And so he apparently did not want to meet somebody who is not serious about spiritual life, or who wanted material gains for their religious activity. And on the other hand, you see that the devotees, you know, the preachers in his call, go to the extreme that even if somebody is not interested in spiritual life, we try to see that, you know, how he'll get some, you know, sukruti or some credit so that he'll advance. So this group looks to be completely different. So how do we understand? Although he is our acharya, we follow his footsteps, so it looks completely different.
Well, Sri Guru Kishore Das Babaji was discussing Sri Prabhupada instances with insincere materialistic people approaching sadhus simply for material benefits. And because he was such a highly elevated pure devotee, he considered himself unable to save them and unfit to save them. And so he prayed for someone who could. And therefore, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, of course, appeared as his own disciple and fulfilled the actual desire of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta to save those disciples that he felt himself personally unfit to save. It's not as if he didn't have, it was because of his intense desire that they should be saved. In fact, Krishna sent Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati to him to execute that duty.
You mentioned talk about pride. What's the normal program in regards to teaching the course of prayer about devotees?
Teaching, yes, prayer. Our prayer is to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare. That's the main prayer. And the program is first, if we offer a prayer and we want it to be sincere, then we offer it by hearing that, you know, hearing. We're calling out the names of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada said one time someone asked him, what is the meaning of that Hare Krishna Maha Mantra? He said, oh my friend, oh my friend, oh my friend, please let me serve you. So if we're offering that prayer sincerely, then we put all our concentration by hearing and listening very intently to the holy name of the Lord as we call out the Lord's name. If someone is calling out the Lord's name and in their mind they're thinking of so many other things, that's not a very sincere prayer. So the first thing is to chant and hear that prayer, concentrate, full concentration, in the same way that, you know, if a child cries, when a child cries, if the child, Mom, come in, Mom, come in. Mom's not coming. If the child is screaming, Mom, crying, absorbed, come. So, when we chant, Srila Prabhupada described that the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra should be like the child, like the cry of a child for its mother. Full concentration, full attention. So we chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and we clear everything out of our heads and we just hear with full concentration and we chant all in the name of God. That's great.
A lot of the questions. material desires, do we always have to be born again, or do we, if we don't fulfill them in this life, do we have to be born again to fulfill them? And in relation to that, what's the best way to convert those material desires in order to avoid that kind of faith?
Generally, the answer is yes. If we have, as Srila Prabhupada said, even a pinch of material desire, we have to taste Amrita. That is the law of materiality. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda are particularly merciful in that even if there is some traces of material impurity still at the time of death, they will appear within our mind in the form of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra or the remembered deities, and by that remembrance of the Lord at the time of death, it can powerfully clear up those last traces that may be there of some material desire at the time of death, and in that way we don't have to take another birth in order to fulfill those desires. And if we do take another birth, it will be in order to be trained up in our spiritual body in preparation for coming back to God. But if they're not traces of desires, but a person hasn't really put in an effort in their devotional service to remove some strong desires, they'll definitely have to take birth. I was reading the other day where Srila Prabhupada was saying if a devotee again sort of engages in activities like the karmic activities, he said they'll have to take birth as a karmic. Which means that you see that sometimes devotees take birth and they may be 20, 30 years old before they actually take up devotional service. Because in that 25 years, they're fulfilling that. They've done devotional service in previous life, but they're actually fulfilling those, living like a karmi, fulfilling those desires. And then when that is there, then Krishna says, now you can, go back to the devotional path. So some people may, waste 40, 50, years of their life. Others who are quite diligent, but may just die before they achieve perfection, then they're given the opportunity that right from birth, there's no fulfilling karma desires, what have you. They're, right from birth, taking up devotional service and not wasting a huge portion of their life. So we have to be careful that if we maintain strong desires, we may take birth and get the opportunity to be a devotee again, but after wasting a huge portion of our life, which really gives us another obstacle to overcome. Alright, thank you. Hare Krishna.